Hey, hello everybody. Welcome to the Spring of Life show. How are you this evening? My name is Jasmine, and I will be hosting along with my beautiful, wonderful, intelligent, vibrant co-host, Benjamin. Hey, Benjamin.
Hey, Jasmine, and hello to everybody out there on the lines tonight.
Happy New Year. It is Year of the Horse.
How fabulous is that?
Can you say your Chinese feng chuk? What? How do you say Happy
Kong
New Year?
Hai Fat, no, Kong Hai Fat Choi? No.
Happy New Year, everybody. And so it's been a really interesting week for me, and as they always are since last speaking with you, because in my world, it's just a constant investigation and exploration of an adventure of discovering what's going on. And I've noticed with many of my acquaintances and friends and peers that there seems to be a lot of interesting energies shifting and vibrations shifting, whether that be as a result of astrological influences. I think I heard someone say Mercury is retrograde, or whether it's solar flares, or it just seems to be a mass consciousness of things moving through. Either way, I too have noticed in my world that a lot of what I'll call them is deeper golden nuggets have been given rise, or some of the sandy grit from the pearl, from the oyster has been reforming new tidbits for my pearl necklace. And I have noticed some layers of shame coming up. And I thought that that would be a really great way to begin speaking with everyone this evening. I'd like to talk about shame, at least to start that way, and just see what comes up from there. I was playing with it a little bit today on Facebook, and I started coming up with a little rhymes. When I was in school and grade school, and if one of the girls had a new beau or a crush or whatever that could be in grade 5 or 6, there was shame, shame, double shame. Now I know your boyfriend's name. And it was horrifying. It was brutal. I remember being at the receiving end of that and just wanting to, really just fall down and be embarrassed and stick my head in the sand and not come up for air for another 100 years, which I think I might have done. Then there's shame on you. You should be so ashamed of yourself. I'm so ashamed. It just goes on and on. What's your experience with that, Ben?
It's always so lovely to be on either end, whether you're shaming someone and feel more in the righteous place, or whether you're actually the one being shamed, which is always the greatest place to be, because hey, doesn't it bring up our stuff?
It really does. And I played with the word today. I'm a bit of a wordsmith, and well, I'm quite a wordsmith. I write, and I'm working on a larger piece of writing that in my world will somehow assist somebody who reads it. I don't know what that looks like, but
I'm sure
someone.
lots of people will be benefiting from your wonderful and kind words.
Well, thank you. And my laser-like words, if nothing else, peppered with saucy, gritty humor, no doubt. But I played with the word, and thank you for that. And I played with the word shame. I've been playing with words lately because I like the nuances and I love double entendres. And sometimes there's even a triple entendre. And I always find that so exciting. Talk about, for me, the ultimate threesome is when one word or phrase has three meanings. If anyone out there could come up with a word or phrase that has more than three meanings, that's a chocolate chip cookie recipe for you for sure. So what I did today was I took the word shame and I took the H out of it. And what I came up with was the word same. And I found that interesting, that perhaps even that could be more of the core and closer to the bone of the truth when we're in that shaming. Because you're right, Ben. I mean, there is a way in which it feels higher and mightier to be platforming ourselves on that self-righteous pedestal of, I'm the one shaming you, which essentially is me judging you and telling you that, you shouldn't be doing that. How dare you?
Which is actually quite funny because taking the H out of it, you're actually taking sort of the high point of the word out of it. And as soon as you take the high point out of it, we end up being the same.
Aren't you brilliant?
So it's quite funny. I actually looked up the definition, and it is for the noun shame, a painful feeling of humiliation or distress caused by the consciousness of wrong or foolish behavior.
Ooh, Wow.
That just sounds like a lovely experience. And though I've definitely had shame in all its varieties, whether I have been shamed, whether I have been the one shaming, there has been all sorts of experiences around it. And the loveliest, actually, quite truly the most wonderful, was when it just went off of my consciousness like water off a duck. When it just rolled right off and I didn't even have to take it on. Because isn't it more so that we actually have to, in one way or another, actually validate or take on as true what the other person is saying to be true? Isn't it something that we're actually agreeing with in one way or another, or we're replicating within our own reality to actually feel that sort of a way?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And in a certain sense, it is self-created.
Shame?
Yes.
Well, that's an interesting one. I've been sitting with that as well. And, you know, I recently wrote a piece on my blog about that, that I had noticed that regardless of being aware of the influences that perhaps, you know, my mom had, or family members or close friends, any outside influences, regardless of where they came from, it was easy and can be easy to sit back and say, well, that's not mine, that belongs to them. And in a way, on spiritual awakening paths, especially in what I like to call the spiritual Olympics, there's a way in which we say, oh, that's not mine, that belongs to them. It's not even mine, that's yours. That wasn't my anger, I just moved it through me. Okay. Sure. And in a way, that's easy. Isn't that an easy out? It's an easy out. I have found from approaching it from a different perspective, which is that regardless of what the influence was, I mean, in my case, I literally had my mother tell me I was a mistake from a very early age, and just moved through that today. Really getting, it's been playing in my ears for about a week and a half, just hearing her voice from when I was about maybe 3.5 to 4 years old. Until eventually I took that on. So yes, sure, I could say she did that. But what I get is that I took it on. And yes, I was a child, and it being innocent and being easily influenced and looking up at this person who's kind of like the superhero in our worlds, the one who's supposed to know, and our very life is in their hands, that when they say something, it has impact and we believe it. And when we mature and grow up, isn't there a way in which we can look at those things? Yes, there is. We can look at those things. I'm not going to tiptoe around it. We can, as conscious, aware adults who are mature and want to recreate our worlds, adult meaning more of a place where you're at in your mind space or your awareness space than having anything to do with an age marker of how many trips you've had around the sun. And certainly, I've recognized that yes, in that shame zone, there are other people who've told me, how could you? You should be ashamed of yourself. That's wrong. Don't act like that. But I signed the papers. I okayed the software installation. I, in my awareness, know that I'm the creator of my world. I can control that. They're welcome to tell me anything they want. It's no different than if someone said, Jasmine, you have 14 nostrils, purple hair, and yellow polka dots on your face, and that blue sweater you're wearing, which happens to be red, by the way, I don't like. Well, I'm going to laugh at them and think perhaps they're on, you know, some kind of psychedelic drugs, and, you know, depending on how they're feeling about things, it's maybe not something that I want to go near. But I don't take that on. But isn't it funny when someone says you're a bad girl, or you're a mistake, or you shouldn't have done that, or, oh my God, how could you? That burning fire of shame, that red fire comes up and humiliation ensues, and we wear it like a cloak.
And it's quite the case that when we are younger, we are like sponges, because we haven't created our own definitions of the world quite yet. And we are here to learn how to create our own and to find our own definitions. Very often we just take on whatever we see around us, because we do very quickly believe that that is the only way of seeing it, because we haven't found alternative ways of seeing things. Mm-hmm. We haven't found other ways of defining our own world. And we then automatically create whatever beliefs or definitions or sentences we're fed. Automatically recreate them in our world and believe that they're true. And somehow some of the first ones that we get seem to get stuck most easily.
I get that. And I've been wondering, you know, Ben, that I agree wholeheartedly. And I've been wondering, what is the magic number? Is there a magic number of how many times we hear something when we take it on? I've heard that remembering someone's name, not always my strong point, and though I am getting better at that, it takes 7 times. And a business person said to me, you know what you do? He said, you just, when you're meeting someone, you know, I'd say, hi, Benjamin, how are you? Oh, what do you do, Benjamin? That's a really interesting story. What's your last name, Benjamin? And if you can say the person's name 7 times in 3 minutes, it'll stick. So I certainly didn't hear 7 times in 3 minutes, hear a mistake. Well, maybe I did. But is there a magic number?
I don't believe that it has so much to do with quantity as it has to do with quality.
Oh, yes.
And
yeah.
When I talk about quality, I specifically talk about emotional impact.
Yes.
Because anything that is delivered with emotional impact tends to stick much quicker. Even like a commercial that we only see once, that we find incredibly humorous and have to tell the next person, we don't have to see it 7 times. But the really, well, even an annoying one, you might remember after the first time. But when it's something that is really boring, it might just fly by without you even noticing. And that's as well the same case with the name of another. If you're not emotionally invested in knowing that name at that time, you can hear it 15,000 times and you might still not remember, simply because there was no hook within to allow for a better way of integrating that information.
I agree. And I suppose like subjects in school, I used to say, oh, you know, history really wasn't interested. History wasn't interested in me. And really it wasn't, because I wasn't interested in it either. But what I discovered 1 year in high school, when I wasn't high in high school, was that, yes, I had a little bit of an addiction issue way back when. But what I loved was that I had a history class that I got 98% in. You know why? The teacher was amazing. There was something about the way he delivered the subject matter that I had zero interest in, quite frankly. The dates, the names, the who did what, when, where, for me just felt, I'll say irrelevant. But he brought it to life. And I don't even know if it was so much about the information he was sharing, so much as it was about the way in which he shared it. And perhaps that's why it stuck. Granted, I don't remember any of it anymore. I couldn't tell you any of those dates. And even after the tests and after the exams, I'm sure I couldn't have remembered anything. But there was some impetus, something that tickled me in him. And perhaps that's what it is when we're emotionally vulnerable, or we're open, or we're looking for the approval of our parents or our lover or someone. And their opinion sticks and we take it on.
We have a wonderful question that was posted on the chat this evening.
Oh, well, thank you. How exciting.
And Mart is asking whether there are certain patterns that we could use healing for.
Certain patterns that we could use healing for. Well, I would ask Mark, if you're still there, I'd love to know more about your question.
Mart.
Mart. Hey, Mart. Sorry. I'd love to know more about your question. What do you mean by patterns? And what was the question?
Healing.
And what do you mean by healing?
Certain patterns that he could use healing for.
Always. But what kind of healing? It sounds to me and feels to me, Mark, that you're referring to a very specific type of healing.
And to just start going into that a little further, there are an infinite amount of ways that healing occurs. And there is also an infinite amount of patterns that we always experience. Now, the question is, what kinds of patterns are actually causing maybe a disturbance or disruption in your life, something that you would like to change or see differently? And is there a healing that you're wanting to address particularly, or are you just talking about healing in general? Because there are so many ways that one could heal oneself, or there's also so many ways of changing one's perspective that might actually have a similar effect, that simply the change in definition might already create a change in pattern. Because very often, seeing the world in one particular way and not necessarily having an alternative way of looking at it allows you to recreate that same pattern. When, however, you do start to adjust your perspective, you might automatically change your behavior simply because you are now looking at the world in a different way.
I agree. And Mart, if you're on still and you're on chat, I welcome you and invite you to perhaps put in the pattern you'd like to change. And we would happily work with you on air, even if you are in the chat room in the background, and just offer you perhaps some perspectives or ways in which you could heal that. And I love the word healing. And I also, in my own world, like the word change or shift. Because often the word healing can feel like something's broken. And even though we can feel like something is broken sometimes, mostly us, ourselves, our bodies, our spirits, our hearts. We use that. Valentine's Day is coming up. Don't we use that? Broken hearts. It's really not broken. But what that feeling is pointing to is that something wants to be redefined. Something wants to be released. Maybe an emotion wants to really be felt. Maybe a part that has been neglected or shoved off in a corner or been shamed into thinking it doesn't deserve or isn't lovable can leave us feeling helpless and powerless. And when we really look at that and really shine some attention on it, it can shift everything. Everything.
Very often the attention itself can also shift things in itself simply by focusing on that particular part. Whether it is something physical or mental, the insight can sometimes come. Sometimes the insight itself will suffice, yet it's not always the case. I have found at least that to be so, that I very often do get the insight, but sometimes it requires to dig a little deeper. And if anyone wants to join us and dig a little deeper into any particular questions or just comment on the things that we have talked about, you can gladly call us in this live show at 1-888-627-6008. Once more, it's 1-888-627-6008.
And I'd like to actually just address the healing for Mart again, and actually for everyone, and for myself as well, because I really get that it's really who we're always talking to, that there's a lot of, there's a way in which many of us can go about healing things that are, we give our power to outside influences. And we will go to a healer per se, or go to a psychic, or go to somebody who's going to give us something. And a lot of that can be seen in the allopathic healing tradition, medicine, which I think can be very appropriate and very useful for certain things. Not to be relied on for everything, because when we rely on anything for everything to become a panacea outside of ourselves, that's where the challenges begin. But what I know for sure from my years of work on myself, and I can qualify with others as well, but how do I ever really know that for sure? What I can say for myself is that there is nothing outside of me that can give me anything. Because I can go to a healer who's going to perhaps give me energy work, and I can feel it, and it's wonderful. I do that myself, but it really is up to me to gain my own awarenesses. If I'm feeling, if I'm having sensations in my body, or I'm having memories come up, or soundtracks. I often have soundtracks come up for myself. This morning I woke up to Tina Turner, What's Love Got to Do with It? It was going over and over. And from that soundtrack, I tuned into how I felt. And in knowing how I was feeling, that allowed me to start hearing that soundtrack from my mother from way back when again, those words. And then to delve deeper into that by asking some questions. And I may be very proficient at this, because it's my chosen career path, and I love doing it. It excites me. And when I sit with a client, I know that there's nothing I can do for them or to them, but what I can do is ask questions, and I have total knowing and faith that they have the answers. I can hold space for them to open into themselves. I can guide them intuitively and insightfully. But ultimately, the gig is theirs. And that is so joyous and so juicy when someone has their own awareness. When I have my own awareness, I know I did it. And if I can get one awareness and shift one perspective that heals one pattern, it means I can do it again.
And beyond also the definitions and worldviews, we can all work with energy because we all have energies flow through us. Now, energy can be a very arbitrary word.
Yes.
However, there is also quite a concreteness to it because all our bodies are made up of electricity and various signals. And if you want to look into some more scientific ways of going about this, there are also types of photography that can actually now get more of a deeper look into what these auras look like. For example, Carillion photography is quite an interesting method. Mm-hmm. There are many others. That one I have found to be one of the most interesting ones. And when we learn to actually draw energy into our bodies, it allows us to gain a greater electricity and a greater charge within our bodies. And when we draw in that light from our higher levels, for example, we can relax our bodies. We can breathe deeper. And with that, breathing deeper allow a re-entrainment into our heart's rhythm. And quite substantially, you can measure these types of effects where then your body starts to recharge. You can quite literally heal your body, not only through mental exercises, but also through gaining more presence, through becoming more conscious. That's also why meditation has become such an exploding field, simply because there is something to it. Being able to quiet the mind, gaining more consciousness and awareness of the present moment, but also to draw in more energy, to draw in more of the higher self, of that spirit energy that allows you to recharge your body, to recharge your cells, and to recharge the healing powers that your body has. And science is catching up to it slowly more and more. but we don't necessarily need everything to be scientific in order to feel these subtle energies in our bodies. We can easily close our eyes, and the more often we do focus within, the more often and the more precise our perception will be that we gain from going within.
I agree. And what I know from meditative practice is that when we open into our bodies and we allow the thoughts to move through and not turn away from them, because there are many schools of thought in meditation that would say to ignore the thoughts. Well, when we're in our body, the body also speaks. Now, I understand that in the middle of a meditation, if one is starting to think about their grocery shopping list, that could be a little bit distracting. And I ask myself, is there information in the grocery shopping list? Perhaps there's something that wants to be added. Perhaps it's speaking to me about responsibility. Perhaps it's pointing me in the direction of noticing that I'm having a challenging time often in my life to take 5 minutes for myself, 10 minutes for myself, 15 minutes for myself. And I offer to those listening who meditate to notice how long you meditate for. Do you do it daily? Are you spending hours in meditation? I had a friend recently visit from India, who's on a whirlwind tour, and said to me, I would like to learn how to meditate for 3 hours. And I said, well, wow, why? To what end? Oh, I just think it would be really cool. Why? To what end? What will that give you? I can meditate. So I said, I can meditate, being a little saucy. I can meditate for 3 hours. Felt like I was in grade school again. And I can. But my question is, why do I want to? I find 15 minutes is more than enough. Because the more often we practice, and we become so practiced that we really are in our bodies. And for me, that seems to be what it's really all about, is learning to come into our bodies and stay present to the signals and fully allow our bodies to be as they are.
And it's so amusing, actually, because when we do set ourselves certain goals, such as meditating for 3 hours, it can in itself become a distraction. It can actually be an avoidance tactic of not necessarily going into or facing the parts that we actually need to face. Or
absolutely, Benjamin, absolutely. It can become a distraction. And that's important for any of us to take a look at. I mean, talk about patterns. Sometimes we just trade a crack habit for a meditation habit. I mean, I see the movie, you know, Aldous Huxley, Greek, get him to the Greek. I love that scene where he tries to get back with his ex-wife and, you know, she says, no, I'm studying this now and that now and the Kabbalah. And he says, well, you know, I'm going to get off. I did yoga. She goes, yeah, you did yoga. You traded in heroin for doing yoga 5 hours a day. You can turn anything into an addiction. And what's an addiction? My favorite definition of that is anything that I can't stop. So if I'm, you know, hooked on the crack of yoga or meditation, am I turning away from living life? Am I turning away from perhaps interacting with others? Thank you for getting me on chat, Ben.
My pleasure.
Ben is a technological wizard. He really is. And I'm not saying that just because I'm really weak in that area. He really is. Thank you. Oh.
Well, I do love to play with the electronics and anything that is technical in that direction. It is certainly a blast for me. And I also do love the technologies of the body and what lies within. I am very fascinated with technologies such as neurohypnotic repatterning, neuro-linguistic programming, from the perspective of clinical application. And clinical, I don't necessarily mean that you have to be in a clinic, but rather that I do understand that these are tools that can be used for almost anything. And some of them have gotten sort of a bad rep because they can also be used to manipulate clay in way, and not quite literally clay, but pretty much conversation to any particular field or any direction that isn't necessarily always suitable. For me, I have developed an understanding that going with what excites my clients is the only way for me to really work. Because when I don't work with my client, but rather to just try to get them to get in a direction that I would like them to be, it doesn't assist anyone. It's just a struggle for me. It's a struggle for them. And it builds up energies and resentment that just doesn't suit or assist anyone. So why not just go with the flow? Why not just go with the river and use that universal energy, kind of like an electricity flow that automatically just knows where it needs to go and flow with it? At that point, it's sort of like Aikido. You are using the energy of the resistance that your opponent brings with him and just allow it to do all the work. And from there on, things can become very easily finished or completed through a slight little touch.
Actually, it's really interesting. I just finished reading a book by Stephen Pressman called Do the Work. And it's a small little book, 76 or 79 pages. And it's a little guide for writers. And it's all about how resistance is your friend. Well, I'll use the term frenemy. I haven't seen that movie, but it seems appropriate. I'm not really even quite sure how popular culture uses it, but here's how I'm going to use it. Where it is your enemy and your friend at the same time. And so I've read this little ditty once, and I'm going to read it again. It really spoke of how resistance can stick you in a corner, have you bury your head in the sand, have you paralyzed with fear, and all the little chatter that goes off, which can actually, forget little, can seem epically monumental in the mind. You can't do that. Who do you think you are? What do you know? You aren't a professional. You're not good enough. Remember what your fourth grade teacher said? Thank God Stephen King didn't listen to that, right? High school teacher told him he'd never write. So there is this voice, and he said, there's the enemy part of it. But there's the other side of it, which it's such a good, essentially it's an indicator. When we have resistance to something, there's a special little nugget in there. There's a special little gift. And what I say is turn into the blazing light, into the cold steel of that resistance, and start to question it. What do you mean I can't do that? Well, you can't. You might fail. Uh-huh. Or is it that I might succeed? What if I do succeed? What if? These are patterns that run deeply in all of us. We've been told so many times at home, don't do that. Stop it. Leave me alone. You can't do that. Stop it. Sit down. Why can't you ever just fill in the blank for yourself? We're told at school, we're shown with those nice, big, thick, red X's. We're told to march in line, to sit down, to listen to the bells, to shuffle through the halls like cattle, which is all fine and dandy. But it somehow ingrains in us that if we act differently or step out of the crowd or be an individual, in order to be an individual, we'd be an individual just like everybody else. And we all want to try and be unique, and we start buying into outer circumstances or perhaps swing the pendulum in other directions that may not be so self-serving or so healthy, like drugs, or like becoming a retail addict, or like becoming a drama squelcher, I don't know, or drama queen. So these patterns, they show up differently for each of us. But if we're noticing a pattern and we find that we don't like it, but we're defending it because we've got all of these excuses about why it should be that way, even though I don't want it to be that way, but that's just the way life is, that's your pivot point. That's your ticket to ride. That's your freedom bus. You get in there because imagine a straight line. On one side, you have what you want, your desires. Break your patterns, heal up, more money, whatever that might be for you. Write that book. ask that girl out, leave your marriage, whatever it is. On the other side, you've got, I can't do that. I can't do that. I'll never get that. That's not done. You just don't do those kinds of things. Who am I to think I can do that? And in the middle is your still point. It's that middle mark where you can work your way into, where you can neutralize the can'ts, the lacks, the shouldn'ts, the will nots, the can nots. And you can neutralize the I should have, I must, I have to have that in order to, I want, I want, I want, I want. Be still, get clear, and then your excitement will propel you forward.
And I have found that quite interesting, because I've also noticed in my own work a difference between resistance and timing. There seems to be resistance sometimes to certain amounts of work when I feel like I have to do something. I oftentimes do feel that with that push of having to do something when I'm actually not feeling like doing it, the resistance oftentimes builds. But I've also found quite the opposite, that when I'm then not pushing for it and I let it go, then timing can actually take care of the rest. It essentially allows me to gain not necessarily the ideas of having to do it one way or another, I have to avoid it or I have to do it now, but rather to just gain an awareness of when it is that I actually want to do this. Oftentimes when I think I have to do it right now, it builds so much resistance, because oftentimes I don't feel called to do it right now. When I let it go, sometimes the moment after, I actually feel like doing it. And from that place, it's so easy. And it just, it's almost like the work does itself rather than me having to torturously push through it. There seems to be really an art to recognizing when we are imposing really hard definitions of timing around having to do things, or we should never do a certain thing, as compared to just letting things take their own timing. For example, I used to smoke cigarettes. And
shame on you.
Here we're back to shame. I was actually wondering when it would come back around.
You know me, I like to pull those so and the line becomes a circle.
Funnily enough, I actually did feel shame around it for a long time, because, ooh, it's so bad. Everyone knows it's so bad. And at the same time, when I was smoking, I didn't necessarily always recognize all the benefits it was actually providing me in my life. Because there were a lot of really good things where I did get a time out that I wasn't willing to give myself otherwise. And I tried to quit so many times, and I struggled with it over and over and over. However, when I let go of the idea that I had to quit smoking, all of a sudden the desire to quit smoking started to surface more and more. All of a sudden, it was much, much easier to redefine my world and to find the place where I didn't feel so called to smoke anymore. And then it was more like it let go of me, because the timing was right, rather than me trying to push the river.
I agree. I agree. And you know, I used to smoke too.
Really?
Say it. Oh, do it. Shame, shame.
No, why would I shame you?
I'm just playing with that, because you know, the truth is I felt shame around that too, especially as a healer and a shaman and a life guide and a coach. Ooh. And you know, I had people say that to me. I remember speaking at a wellness fair and then going, excuse me, I had to go and have a smoke. And this woman who was who organized the wellness fair said, "You smoke?" And I said, "Uh-huh." And I said, "And I drink and I use salt and eat meat and I love caffeine and I do sugar." Mm-hmm. And she said, "I can't believe that you're a life coach and you smoke." I said, "Well, what's so hard to believe?" "Well, you're just not supposed to." I said, "Who?" And so there was this interesting conversation that ensued that actually muddled up my smoke break, but nevertheless, that ensued about the belief system around what a healer per se is supposed to look like, what a coach is supposed to look like. I said, "You know, maybe I should be wearing white flowing robes and walking on water and turning water into wine and producing sushi for the whole wellness fair. That could be kind of fun, right?" And I found myself in that place feeling very authentic and honest in looking at the belief system about the judgment around it and what's equated with what. But I also noticed in the back of my mind that I felt I was justifying myself because I was ashamed. There was a little niggly bit of fear and a fear of being outcast, not fitting in. Ooh, professionally speaking, you know, I shouldn't be smelling like a cigarette butt and yada, yada, yada. And as you spoke to, Ben, when I started to look at the benefits of what it did give me, like bringing up this shame, like really putting it in my face, like being able to stand there and say, and not lie, to stand there and take a breath and be amidst a room full of my peers and have a cigarette. That took guts. That took some cojones. And I could feel, in a way, it helped me find my own feet. It helped me feel, I'll use the word empowered, that I could stand amidst a crowd of naysayers, amidst a crowd of perceivable judges, amidst my own judgment, and still do what I wanted to do. And in a way, there was kind of, for me, there was a rebellion associated with the whole cigarette deal. I'm happy to say, and yeah, I am happy to say, that when I neutralized that, when I found the benefits that smoking gave me, and I found the enjoyment of it from a truly beneficial perspective of what it was giving me, outside of all the reports and the lovely pictures and graphics on the cigarette backs that they give us here, that I neutralized it and it let go of me too. Then came up the desire, as with you, that was really, I do want to stop smoking. I do notice for myself that it's not something I'm enjoying anymore. That it's actually the vast majority of the cigarettes I was smoking were actually more impulsive or out of wanting to take a break, or when an emotion came up that I didn't really want to take the time to sit with, like anger or frustration, I'd reach for a cigarette. And so I was able to notice what the patterns were for me, and it just stopped.
Well, what I found very fascinating wasn't so much anymore about quitting smoking as it was about doing other things. Mm-hmm. By that point, it wasn't so much a moving away from smoking, which I haven't found to work all that well, but rather moving toward other things, such as doing more creative work or just having a freer life. And what I found so wonderful about smoking was what of a great teacher it was. How many things I learned through actually going within and finding all the dissonance and the things that weren't really necessarily agreeing with my outer world and compared to my inner world. To have to sort through all these thoughts and to stand in judgment of others and in judgment of myself and to really find the empowered freedom to decide to smoke when I wanted to smoke, when I actually did feel like smoking, and to let go of the judgment around that simple behavior. And it's so funny, because when we look at some of the regarded healers in ancient traditions, such as shamans, there are lots of them that smoke like a chimney. And yet, on the other hand, they're then regarded because they have a different type of status and they do it in a spiritual way. And yet, for me, it actually became something spiritual when my heart's desire really called for it, and I then smoked. And when I felt like not having a cigarette for the next 15 minutes, hour, 13 days, I don't know, whatever, however long it is, I never know until the moment comes, that I would also not smoke for that amount of time. That I could go with smoking or not smoking, always in accordance with what felt most aligned with what came from my heart's desire, but really from my innermost heart's desire. And that then became a powerful spiritual practice. And eventually, actually, I just didn't have a call to actually smoke anymore. And it required at the same time, though, to become so specific with the listening to the listening of my emotional sensations, to be able to decipher all the different messages that I was getting, that I needed to become really clear. And when I did, it fell away. And I'm not even saying I will never smoke again. It's not like I've now got a big red X on my shoulder that I should go to Smokers Anonymous or Nicotine Anonymous, if there even is such a thing. However,
Nicotine Anonymous, I like it.
I have become free, not only from the judgment around it, but also simply from the ideas that I have to be enslaved to either smoking or not smoking. And rather now I'm standing in empowered freedom. And that's actually something that I wouldn't have quite gotten the same way without smoking.
I hear that. For me, I liken the learnings from that to, well, I have a question for everyone out there, everyone who's listening, all you beautiful people, and actually to everybody who's vibrationally attuned to this type of vibration. Imagine for a minute a city nearby, or the biggest city that you can imagine, whatever one you're called to, Toronto, Hong Kong, Chicago, Los Angeles, wherever, New York, Frankfurt, matters not, Saint-Tropez,
Sydney,
yeah, anywhere, big, thriving, busy city. Now, imagine the very center of it, maybe the financial district, the theater district, the shopping district, the banking area, whatever that might be. Really, lots of people. It's buzzing with activity. There's people everywhere, crossing streets, moving. They've got their parcels. There are children. They're talking. There's different dialects. People are having coffees and smoking cigarettes and carrying their briefcases. And imagine yourself standing now on a busy street corner, watching everyone go by. And now imagine yourself naked. Ooh, how does that feel? What's going on? What are the people around you doing? How are they reacting and responding to your sudden nakedness? All your clothes are gone. We're talking every stitch. It's just you and your birthday suit, your beautiful skin that's holding you all together. Did they stop? Are they looking at you? Are some pointing fingers? Are some laughing? Are others just watching? Are some taking pictures? Are they YouTubing you as you imagine it? Are they posting it up on Facebook? Are you taking a selfie? Are some of them joining you? Are some of them standing there in awe? Wow, that's amazing. That's so impressive that you can stand there amidst all of this gawking, judgment, finger pointing, other people perhaps joining in, some not even looking. They're just so busy. They're like, so what else is new? Imagine that Who are you in that naked moment? That's what smoking did for me. Who was I in that naked moment? Amidst the judgment, amidst the others who might join me, amidst the other healers around me who were sneak smokers, who would come up to me after and say, oh, you know, I my best friend smokes and I love to go out and have a cigarette with them, but I don't do it around here because in the conscious community, it is considered the height of unconsciousness, the height of shame. So for me, it was really just another opportunity and gateway to experience and exfoliate the shame. Do you have anything to add, Ben? Or is that just like a heavy enough moment to leave it at, really? Wow, that was powerful, huh? The still point, which, I mean, I love, but on radio, it's probably not the best thing to do is to have still air.
It's certainly fascinating to be naked in public from that type of a perspective of being completely exposed, allowing everyone to know everything about you, sort of like having a billboard on your forehead that people can just read anything they would like to know about, so that you really have everything out there, your thoughts, your secrets, and then to learn to be comfortable in that completely and entirely, to find ways of not being affected by any judgment that may come around. And it's certainly something that I've been working on, to find the ways that allow me to not be affected and to not feel shame around being exposed, no matter what it is. Now, I also see that certain things are just not anyone else's business but mine. But at the same time, it's also fascinating to learn to handle that type of a judgment, because it requires me to get such clear definitions of what I am, who I am, how I am, and how I see the world, that someone else pointing or laughing or doing whatever it is they do doesn't affect me in that negative way. That it is not something that I need to recreate as a negative effect in my world again, because I have found other ways of looking at it. And I guess that, to come back around to the little child, very often children just don't have their own definitions of themselves, of their world, of their relationship, such that when someone comes around and shames them, that they then take on that definition so easily, so quickly, and absorb it and make it part of their own definition of who they are or how the world is or what you should and shouldn't do, that it does affect them. And if there was a lot of emotion that was carried along with it, it can stick, so that even if other people come around and tell them otherwise, that original definition might still stick around until they learn to redefine it for themselves.
Yes, and that redefinition, as you spoke to earlier, can be the freedom from that pattern can be as simple as having the awareness and shifting the definition, shining the flashlight on it, can be enough. Sometimes there's a little deeper work that wants to go on, like opening into the emotion, opening into the memory, sometimes forgiveness work. Sometimes being able to let that energy and vibration move out from your body in a cellular fashion. Sometimes a letter, a journaling, an emotional release, a smudging, whatever works for you. These are all just permission slips. but the awareness. It's important to get a full awareness and to let it all flow together. Sometimes I find tears will come and there's no story, and the tears, they're just like flushing a toilet, really. It just comes and goes really, really quickly. So,
yes.
And that's beautiful as well.
And the nice thing about tears like that is that oftentimes they come after we have already created large changes in our inner worlds. They oftentimes do represent the washing out of the chemical states that were associated with those old beliefs, those old patterns of thinking. And it's very fascinating. Yes, you are absolutely right. Different issues or different changes require different levels of adjustment. It always seems to be about energy patterns or vibrational adjustments of one way or another, whether that's through thought, beliefs, or whether that is through energy healing,
or
whether
the emotion,
that's through
emotional release, cell core, cell memory release,
whether that's physical healing. There are so
body work.
Many ways, and they're really infinite, just the same way that issues or problems are essentially.
Sure. For some people, they enjoy working with crystals. People enjoy working with sound. There is no right or wrong way. What there is one way. And that one way is the way that best works for you, that feels most kindred to you, that you're most attracted to now for yourself. The permission slip that calls you is what will allow you to open into your insights, your awarenesses, and your releases of any shame, pain, or gain that is no longer working for you.
There is essentially only one way, and the one way is the one that works.
Bingo. For you. And the key words being for you. And we invite all of you to come and check out our website. We're rebranding. So there's some information on the BBS radio, which we're on the February 17th. We have springoflife.com coming up. You can check out my personal blog at jasmineeye.com, and there'll be a link to the website there. Currently, we still have the Academy of Life, which will be shifting. It's so much information, but as you can see, it's always in shift. And if you'd like to do some work on yourself, or, you know, just read some articles or check out some of our resources, we'd be happy to assist you in any way that we can to help you gain your insights. Because you know what? You can. And you already are. How fabulous is that?
And just to let you know, we are built on the foundation of making you more independent, allowing you to become the master of your own world and really stepping into your own two shoes and gaining the tools and abilities to work in any which way that allows you to resolve and dissolve anything that you would like to.
Yeah, we're totally into empowering you. It really is. You know, there's such a, for me, it's just my joy. I really get off on just watching people empower themselves and play with some new awareness tools that shift them in their life, to see their eyes open up and know that they did it. That's the joy. That's the juice, because you already are creating your world. So, you know, you might as well create one that you want to. And I would like to thank you all for joining us.
Thank you.
We adore you, and we hope to talk to you to next week. Bring your questions, bring your friends, Skype us, type us. We welcome your presence. Many blessings for a joyous, wonderful evening, and enjoy the next show.
Have yourself a blast. Thank you very much, and have a great evening.